Welcome to the Literary Escape Podcast, the only podcast that serves both readers and authors of historical Christian romance. We read, discuss, review, and rate books in this unique romance subgenre, and sprinkle in a few contemporary Christian suspense books. Authors, we bring you inside tips and tricks from those who have gone before you. Then we bring both readers and authors together for fun-filled live Q&As. Literary Escape is the one-stop shop for both readers and authors to connect, learn, and grow together. Let's dive into this adventurous episode. Well, welcome, Lynn. We're so excited to have you here with us today to talk about your Dive Team Investigation series.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Oh, first of all, we just want to say we loved this. And you should know you are our first contemporary suspense romance series on this podcast. Mm-hmm.
So what do you normally read?
We generally do historical Christian romance.
Okay. Okay. I love it. I love historical romance. That's awesome.
This year we were like, let's maybe like swing to the side a little bit. So you are also our first author in this genre to be on the show.
Oh, wow. I'm honored. That's awesome.
I have to tell you, I discovered you through, was it last year you had a novella in one of the ACFW contests? Okay.
Yes.
So I was a judge for one of the, I don't know which one it was. I don't remember. I did a couple of them. And I read your novella, and then I was like, I got to find more books by her.
That's the best because, you know, that's part of the, some people don't like novellas because they're like, oh, they're too short. I didn't really used to love novellas either. And then I had three kids. And sometimes I just want to be able to read the whole story from beginning to end without it taking forever. And I only have... I have no self-control. So if I get into the story, I will ignore all my responsibilities so that I can finish it. And so it's good for me sometimes to have a shorter story so that this lack of character and quality of control is only a limited impact on my life. And so I like them a lot now, but I have also found authors the same way where I've read, you know, maybe there's a collection and I know one author in it and I read that one. And then I'm like, well, these are short. It's a small investment. If I don't like it, it's no big deal. And then I go, oh, these are good. I want to know more about whatever. And so that makes me happy because I'm like, that's part of why some people, you know, don't care. And if they don't, that's fine. But I love them. So
yeah,
I'm so excited. That's awesome.
They're like quick wins for me, like you said, when you just have this little bit of time that you can't have to devote to a whole novel, that you can just kind of get that quick win. So,
yeah.
All right. So when you were reading, or not when you were reading, I'm sorry, when you were writing your Dive Team Investigation series, what was your hope or desire for your readers?
Well, so I think one of the things that I love most about Christian fiction is that our books are hopeful, even when things are really terrible and awful and tragic. And with suspense, you can get into some pretty dark things. You know, this series covers, you know, serial killing and human trafficking and child kidnapping. And there are some really heavy topics that we can hit in a suspense novel, but when you're writing it specifically with the Christian market in mind and for Christian readers, there's so much hope because it's never you're never just floating along in this tragedy with no thought of how it's going to work out and is anyone in control and does anyone see what's happening to me. There's always that sense that somebody knows what's happening and there's a plan and a purpose behind it. And I don't think I really fully realized it when I first started writing because the Dive Team series was my first series with Revell. But I've realized since then that I always wind up with themes of God's sovereignty and God's plan and purpose for us in all of my novels. And so I think it's one of those things where life is hard. It just is. It doesn't matter. Everybody is going through something difficult. And one of the things I love about Christian fiction is that we can we can give our readers that escape from whatever is going on in their lives. I read for escape. I mean, no judgment. Like I'm like, I want to fall into this world and be absorbed in it for a little while. But then there is that sense when you're reading it, that it's not hopeless. I don't only read Christian fiction. It's not that, but it's just that so much of the secular market has, you know, either it's just so dark or there's no hope. And you're like, these people have no, I mean, granted, I know they're fictional characters, but yeah. You just have that heavy feeling when you read it. And mine, I want people to feel like, okay, no matter what, God's got this, there's a plan, there's a purpose. And we're going to, you know, and of course that's part of what makes romance so great too, is we get the happily ever after at the end. And so I don't think I could ever write anything else because I need that happily ever after. Mm-hmm. But it is, there's just a lot. There's a lot of heavy stuff in these, but there's always, I hope, that sense that God is trustworthy, even when things are tough, and that there's always hope and a purpose behind it. And I try really hard not to be preachy about that. I want that to be organic in the storytelling.
You nailed it. Oh. We talked about that. We did. Just the way that you deliver it was refreshing. Like I also read, this is just a small genre, but I read everything. Like
sure.
It's kind of funny. Like I have my like some romance books, and then I have these books where it's like I can't even put them on the same table because it's like you're right. Just some can be so dark and so heavy, and like that just consistent, that hopelessness, there's no one big to rely on. Like they have to rely on themselves, and it's makes
it
scary.
Do you find yourself then, you two ladies, when you read this, because I read in the secular market too, off and on. Do you find yourself going, you need Jesus? You need Jesus.
Yes. And it makes me think of the readers as well, where it's like, you know, there's a lot of, I really like political thrillers. That's probably the main thing I read. And so you always have, you know, this main, whether it's Gray Man or whatever, where there's the kind of a larger than life, you know, he's a spy or a special agent or whatever. But there's just this sense that they're trying to do it all on their own, and they don't, it's going to happen when they finally reach that age where they can't be the guy anymore. And most of these series I read are now 17, 18, 19 books in, and these characters are getting, they're wrestling with that, which is great. But you're like, man, you know, there's so much purpose in life, and there's none of that in the stories. And even when the character, I don't know, you know, some of the authors may be believers, but it's just not in their, it's not overt at all in their stories. You know, real mention of God or faith. And you do think, oh, these, yes, they're not real people, but Jesus would make a big difference here. And yeah. He does. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. So who were your favorite characters to write for this series?
You know, I was thinking about that, of course, because we're going to talk about Mr. Cook in a minute. I love Mr. Cook and Miss Edna. I had fun with the two of them just as that, like, not comic relief, but just those little side characters that are fun to write. And they show up without necessarily, they weren't really in the plan. They just showed up and they were fun to have. But then... I can never choose between my main characters. Sometimes I think I've said that whoever I'm writing right now is my favorite. Like it's, you know, that because I'm so in Ed. But, and there's little pieces of me in all of them, but no one, it's not like there's one person that is me. I do think that Anissa is probably the closest to me as far as, I wasn't a missionary kid, but a pastor's kid. And so that whole idea of, I had a degree in engineering and now I write, and some of her struggles about, the idea of still having, coming from a ministry family, mm-hmm. but then having a job in the world, and the idea that that's not, you know, that's not the second string. You're not, you know, you're not a second string Christian if you're working in nursing or in law enforcement, or if you're a teacher, you know, the pastors and the youth pastors and the worship ministers, they're not the first string and you're the second string. That's not how that works. And but there, you know, there's some of that that I had wrestled with her. And so I think she got a lot of that. And then I mean, Gabe, it's hard not to just, I loved Gabe. And so by the time I got to writing the third book, there was a lot of pressure to get Gabe right, because he'd been so important in the other books and people wanted his story, and there's the hashtag Team Gabe and, you know, that kind of stuff. And so I was like, whew. But I loved Gabe's just snarkiness, and he was fun. He was a lot of fun. So there, I mean, on any given day, I could probably answer that question
differently.
Yeah. Every day would be a different answer.
Yeah. We'll say I did love Gabe's humor. You wrote him really well.
Yeah.
You like wrote it so vividly. Like, you can just picture it, you know, it's bantering and.
Yes. The banter is, I love the banter. And so he's that. Yeah. He's fun.
Yeah. And I do like that line of thinking that you addressed with Anissa. Is it Anissa? I think I said her name wrong when I was reading
it. So funny, not a funny story, just a fact. If you look at it phonetically, it is Anissa. And then, but I know someone whose name is Anissa, and that's how she spelled it. And that's where I got it. So in my head, she's Anissa. But I think the audio is, they say Anissa. And it, you know, it's, that's part of the whole, like, you know, being an author, once it's out there, it's everybody else's. It's not just yours anymore. So in my head, she's Anissa. But if she's Anissa in your head, that's fine too, because she's still who she, it's still fine. Yeah.
Yeah. But I loved that line of thinking that you pulled out for her, because she, you know, like you talked about, she came from that missionary family. And it feels like, well, if I'm not in the mission field, then I'm not really in the mission field. But we are,
because we are, absolutely,
we are in the world, but not of the world. And we're rubbing shoulders with people every day at work. And, yeah, but it does. I think everybody probably goes through that, where you feel like the pastors and the missionaries and your worship leaders are like up here, and then you're, I don't want to say, but you know what I mean? Like,
you're on the team. You're just not a starter. And it's like, no, everything in my life revokes back to baseball at this stage. But yeah, it's like, you know, but that's not true. We're all, you know, we all have our part to play. And, so yeah,
where we are at for a specific reason and for a specific
time. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, then we'll kind of talk about, like, what are your favorite scenes to write then from the series?
Well, in general, I love it when they're all together and they're just the banter. I love writing the banter. In fact, my editors fuss at me, because in my head, when I'm writing the banter, I don't really picture them clearly. It's fuzzy. You know, it's not like I have this strong image of who they all are, but I can hear it and I can picture it. And so I don't need all the tags, you know, like Ryan said, Adam said, Gabe said, because I know who's talking. And so then my editor is like, I need to know who's talking here. And I'm like, but do you really, like, does it matter if Adam said it or Gabe said it? Cause it's one of those, there's this, you know, it's just a conversation with a group of people. And do we really care? And she's like, yes, we really care. And so, inevitably, I end up with more, a few more, like, dialogue tags and things than I originally started with, but probably a few less than she would prefer. And we do try to make sure that it is clear who's talking. But I like the rapid fire nature of it. And when you're reading it and you have all these little dialogue tags, it can kind of slow the pacing down a little bit. And I want it to be as punchy and quick as possible. So definitely those scenes, those are some of my favorite when they're all together. And then, I mean, I'm a total sucker for a kissing scene. So if I can get a kissing scene going, I'm all in. I'm like, yes, that's what I want to do. That's awesome. So those are probably my absolute favorite, those two.
Yeah. I loved your banter. I think, to me, I don't know about for you, but it read like a sitcom.
Yes.
And I loved it.
So that's interesting, because see, that's one of the things that, and again, it's interesting because this was the first series I wrote for Revell. So it was all new, it was the first series I've written, and I didn't fully realize I was doing it at the time, but I've since done it again and again. I do think of my series, each book has its own couple, but the series as a whole, I think of as more of an ensemble cast, like Friends, or, you know, that was maybe the first one that when I was younger, was that idea that all six of them are the stars. There's no one or two stars and everybody else is the supporting cast. And I tend to think of my books as an ensemble cast. And I try to make sure as much as possible to get all six of them on the page somewhere in that first book, even if it's a brief introduction. Mm-hmm. And then by the end, all six of them are crucial to the whole story by the third book. And I do tend to, I didn't do it on purpose with that, with this series, but I do it on purpose now. And I didn't realize I was doing it at the time until I did it. And I think it makes it, it's tricky because I try to make each book stand alone. I want people to come to it and read it and not be completely lost if they come to, say they pick up Into Deep first and they haven't read Beneath the Surface. But at the same time, I do want it to be that if you have read Beneath the Surface, there's that little feeling of, oh, there they are. You know, like that, oh, I like it when they come back, or, oh, I know who they are. You know, that kind of thing, or I could see this coming. And it was the hardest was with One Final Breath, because by that point, trying to write it where if someone picked it up and read it without the interactions between Gavin and Issa from the first two books, that they could still pick it up and read it and not be lost. And it's, so it's a fine line where you don't have to have that information, but if you have it, it strengthens and deepens the story.
Yes.
And that part is a little tricky.
Yeah, but it is still, it's so nice to have all those characters there, because usually, you know, you're reading a book and, you know, you meet someone and then, you add as you go. But to see them all together, like, it shows that established continuous relationship. It's like you look forward to seeing them again. It's like, I didn't even recognize it. But now that you say that, it's like, you know, that's it makes it really enjoyable, because you're meeting them and learning more about them versus just, oh, who is this person? And now this person.
And I do, because a lot of times it's like, well, first couple got their happily ever after, and then the next book comes up and you never hardly even see them or hear about them. And it's like, I kind of like to know where they're at in their relationship right now. So I thought you did a great job. Plus you layered in like little things that made you wonder about the other characters until they got to their, like, you wanted to hear their story, right? So you did a great job with that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. I want this quote. You go ahead.
Okay. How did you come up with the plots?
Oh, this is always a hard one, because I don't know. I wish I had a firm. I can tell you how I came up with the general idea. There's a writing event. They've changed the name of it a couple times, but it used to be called the Writers Police Academy. And there is a group of writers that they have police officers, Secret Service agents, FBI, ATF, DEA, all these different people come in, scientists, forensics, and you can go and take classes. And the classes are designed for writers to learn about things like blood spatter and footprints and fingerprints. I took a fascinating class on footprints. I've still never really gotten to use it as much as I would like to, but it was really interesting. Blood spatter, it was sheep's blood, to be fair. I don't know where they got it. I didn't ask. It wasn't human. But like throwing it on the wall and doing the lights to see and like looking at blood spatter and things like that. And it's fast. That's the whole point. I mean, it's a conference for writers to make sure that they're writing these things accurately. And so I was at a Writers Police Academy, and there was an option to go to see their dive team. And we actually got on a little bus and drove to the YMCA, and the law enforcement dive team from Guilford County, North Carolina did a little demonstration in the Y pool. Like, you're sitting, I could still think you were sitting on these bleachers, the chlorine, you know how in an indoor pool, the chlorine is like eye watering and you feel like it may be soaking into your pores just sitting there. And they were talking about how they do searches and how they the body bags that they use, their special body bags, so that they can put them in and get the body in and then float it back up and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, this would make a great series. And I told Lynette Eason is one of my dear friends, and I told her about, we were at the conference together, and she was like, that's the one you have to write. You have to write that one. That's the one for Revell. And I was like, well, maybe. And this was before I had sold anything to them. And I was like, that would be awesome. We'll see. And so it worked out great. So the first idea was just the dive team itself, because one of the things they commented on is the FBI does have a dedicated dive team investigative unit. And there are occasionally larger law enforcement agencies that are on large bodies of water. So like the Great Lakes areas, coastal areas, sometimes they will have people that are mostly for underwater investigation. Most places, though, it's their second job. It's like they're in homicide, or they're in white collar, or they're in whatever else. Sometimes they're not even in Milford County, where they gave us the example. Some of them aren't even sworn officers. Some of them are like lab techs and things like that, who have an interest in diving. And so then they are on the dive team, and it's a volunteer thing, and they do their trainings on the weekends. And then I found a guy who I mentioned him in the acknowledgments. Mike Berry he trains divers specifically for underwater investigation. He's a believer. He's so friendly. And I sent him a few scenes. There's actually a scene in Into Deep where I sent him the scene, and he gave me all this feedback about how to make the diving accurate. And I had to change some of it because it was too much detail. It was fascinating, but it was a little too much detail. I was like, nobody cares that much. Like, that there's a line there between, we want it to be accurate and we want you to know that we've done our research, but also I call it the Tom Clancy effect. I started reading Tom Clancy novels when I was in like middle school, which ages me a little bit, but also I was like, you know, you read a Tom Clancy novel, and if you never have, trust me, you feel like maybe you could yourself go drive a Russian submarine. Like, there's so much detail. And I'm like, I don't need that really in my reading. I just need to know you actually have an idea of what you're talking about. So that was a lot of fun. There are, you know, just things about like search patterns and how they would do things and what they would do. That was fun. I did learn how to dive while I was writing these, so I could have a better understanding of what it was like. And which was terrifying, honestly. I ended up doing it, and I haven't had a chance to dive in years, but we went to the Keys. We ended up going to the Keys and diving. And I was just like, this is why people do this, because it's amazing. It's like swimming in an aquarium. It was just so beautiful. But part of the reason for choosing Anissa to be from Yap is that Yap is a island in Micronesia, and my brother-in-law and sister-in-law had done some medical missions. My sister-in-law is a pediatrician, and they had done some medical missions in Yap, and they know the missionaries there. And some of their kids were in a college, at college local to me. And so I got to sit down and talk to them about Yap and being missionary kids and all that kind of stuff. And so sometimes these plots, it's hard to say this is where it was. This is the moment. Like, I know the moment when I thought for the series idea, using the dive team, being able to have different people. But then it gets tricky how to really nail that down. And sometimes it's who you have access to. I knew I wanted to have white collar crime, and I knew someone who let me talk to, I talked to several. There were several police officers in Greenville where I live, who talked to me about their work and diving and all of it. It was amazing. And so sometimes it's who you have available to you that gives you that spark for the next step. Yeah. And I'm not a plotter. There are times I wish I was, because the efficiency would work for my brain, and it doesn't work. I can't do it. I have to just start writing it and see where it goes. So sometimes I'm not 100% sure who the bad guy is or how it's going to land until I finally get to the end.
You do a great job because I don't think I got it before it was readable.
It's a true story. I do tell people sometimes the reason you didn't get it is because I didn't know either.
See, but you have like little snippets. Like I think even in one of them, I don't want to give anything away, but I was like, oh, this has kind of a revenge-y feel to it, like something. And you couldn't follow it. Like I was like, oh, it completely slipped my mind. And then it was until the end. I was like, oh my gosh, was she really going for that? Like, did you know? Like, so really, you say that because even if you didn't know, just it was perfect.
It is one of my favorite things about writing. It doesn't happen all the time. Every now and then you write something at the beginning and you're not even sure why you wrote it. And then later on, it all ties together and you go, oh, that was awesome. And I didn't do it on purpose. And sometimes you get to the end and you go, oh, okay, so I need to put this here and this, you know, when you're going back and sometimes it gets added in revisions. I will give you an example without spoilers. There's in the very first scene of the first, so in Beneath the Surface, when we meet Gabe, there's something going on that he is really unhappy about. And in book three, when we get to Gabe's book, toward the end of the book, I went, oh my word, of course that's what he's going to need to help him get to her. And he's going to have to call this person who he does not like and say, I need your help. And these people who messed him up earlier on, he's going to need them to save the girl, you know, kind of thing. And when it happened, I remember going, that's awesome. That's what I'm going to do. And I did not do it that way on purpose. And so I had a lot of fun. That was one of those moments where I was like, yes, this is great. So it does. It is a little alarming sometimes when people are like, oh, there's so much foreshadowing or so much whatever. There's a meme going around right now on Facebook with a lot of my writer friends where it's the one person is talking like the literature teacher is talking about all the foreshadowing and symbolism, and the author is standing there like, yeah, totally did not do that on purpose, but yay. That's how that feels sometimes.
Yeah, well, it's just a natural process. And sometimes when I'm writing, I was like, I'll have those moments where I'm like, that's perfect. I'm like, okay, thank you, Lord.
Yes, 100%. I'm like, Lord, y'all, you did that. That is not me. Every time I get to the end of the book, I just look at it and go, well, God did that because I don't know how we got there.
I love it. Okay, one of our favorite characters in the series is Mr. Cook. He's a wonderful man. And I just had to know if he's based on a real person or not.
He is not based on a real person. He's more of a, I think of him more as a combination of a few people. I didn't really have any grandparents in this story, and I wanted to have somebody that was kind of the elder, you know, to have that person who could bring some perspective and some wisdom. And when I started the whole idea of his prayers being, you know, like if he starts praying for you, you better, you know, it's on, something's going to happen. And I do know it's a lady where it's like, she's the most godly woman I've ever known. And like, you feel like you're in God's presence when you're just around her. And I love this. I feel like we miss that a lot in our world because we're so busy and we're so, our age, you know, we tend to be with people our age or our kids' age and not as much with the other. And I really wanted to have the, I don't really know that I would call him the elder statesman, but just that wisdom. And, and then when I started writing him, I could not, he was the best. I was like, oh, I love this guy. He's awesome. And so it was more the idea of just having that person who is the wise one and the one that everybody goes, oh, if he says something, we
need to listen. Yeah.
We know that God does not, you know, like it's not like there are people who have a special line to God that the rest of us don't have. And yet at the same time, you know, sometimes we're like, I don't actually, I think she might. Like, I know she doesn't, but and this woman, Miss Libby, in our world is such a godly, she's just an extraordinary woman. And I, my son actually got to hear her speak recently, and I was so excited because I feel like this is a woman who gave to our whole church. And then I was in a small group with her. And then she's in her 90s. And she came and spoke to my son's homeschool class because she was friends with Elizabeth Elliot and and Bill before they went to Ecuador and before he was killed, the missionaries that were killed there. And so she was talking to them about all of that stuff. And she has so much knowledge and information, and she's so gracious. And just the way she was talking to these kids, and I'm like, I want to be her when I'm in my 90s. I want to be this woman of grace and dignity and kindness and compassion and humor, and be still pouring into 15-year-olds, you know, because she could easily be like, listen, I've done my stuff. I've put in the work, and I'm ready to coast. And she isn't. She's still giving, and it's extraordinary. And so, you know, I like having it. And I don't to remember now that I say that out loud. I don't have as much of that in the second series, and then the series that's currently releasing, I do have the elders back because I really wanted to have some people who had that perspective on life. I think it also because they look a lot younger to me. I'm going to be 50 this year, and people in their 70s and 80s don't look nearly as old as they used to. You know, it's like, oh, they're still going strong. They have a lot to get.
Reminds me a lot of, I think it's in Titus where they talk about, you know, mm-hmm, the older men,
yes,
the younger and the older women teaching the younger women.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and that's, we actually have a group at our church that they call AM to PM, and it stands for Affirming and Mentoring Preschool Moms. And when I had younger preschool age kids, the idea was that the preschool moms are doing this Bible study, and then we had mentors, who grandmothers, who were in there with us, mm-hmm, and their perspective, and Miss Libby was one of mine, and their perspectives were just so amazing, because they're at the point where they've had their preschoolers, and they've raised their kids, and now they have grandchildren, and
yeah,
it was such, and I love that they're still doing that in our church, where these older ladies are giving back to, very intentionally giving back to the younger women, and yeah, it's important. It's biblical. It's completely biblical. Absolutely.
It yeah. It's like, I might retire from my day job, but you never retire from God's
yes,
word, right?
Absolutely. 100%. Yes.
Yeah. So you gave us a little hint, which, by the way, I loved your second series and how you brought these guys into it.
Yes.
A little bit. I really enjoyed it. So can you give us a little bit on the next series that you're working on then?
Absolutely. So perspective, the Dive Team series takes place in a fictional town in central North Carolina that I completely made up. And because I wanted to be able to have the flexibility to do what I wanted to do with it. And then the next series, the second series, is focuses on the Secret Service out of Raleigh, North Carolina, which in my fictional world is an hour-ish from Carrington, which is where the Dive Team series is. And then when I finished that one, I talked to my editor and we were discussing what we wanted to do and really wanted to, instead of having the focus be on a law enforcement group, you know, the Dive Team investigations, the Secret Service, is more of a family, family tie, family being the tie between them. And so the new series, which actually the first book releases in March, is set in a fictional town again, because I can tell you I've decided I'm all for the fictional towns because I'm a bit of a control freak and I want to be able to do whatever I want. Like, I want to be able to make my town work for my story and not the other way around. But I set it in the mountains of North Carolina. I'm originally from Hendersonville, North Carolina, which is in the mountains. And I am intentionally vague about where it is. So if you've been to the mountains of Western North Carolina, you can just pick your spot. That's where it is. It's fine. And two families, the Quinns and the Pierces, who do not get along, low-key feud happening there, and they've been there forever. And the Quinn family, there's Papa and Granny Quinn are pushing 80, and they have 7 children, and then their children have children. And so the three that are tied together are all cousins who were born within a year of each other. And they grew up together, went to school together. They were, because of the way the timing worked, they were in the same grade. And they all have their own story. So it's the cousins. So we get a lot more family dynamic. The ensemble is even bigger. We, for the first time ever, had to put we actually put a family tree in the beginning. We considered a character list and decided not to do the character list, but we did go with a family tree so that people can see which parents go with which kids and where the kids are. Because at this point, Papa and Granny Quinn have, the stories are on their youngest grandchildren, sort of. But then there are great-grandchildren. Like, we are, you know, we've got lots of people, and I had to work really hard. And so far, I've gotten really good feedback that everybody can keep everybody straight. But we did put the family tree in there to make sure. And so, yeah, it's exciting. The first book comes out in March, and then we wrote another novella collection. And so Lynette Eason and Natalie Walters and I did another one, and that comes out in November and has a couple of secondary characters in that. And I just turned in the second book in the series. So I'm waiting for my editor's feedback on that. And then I write the third one, and then I have to figure out where I'm going to go from here. So it's weird, because in publishing, you're so far ahead of, in traditional publishing, at least, you're typically writing so far ahead of the release date that this new series starts in March, but I've already written 3/4 of it, because I've written 2 books and a novella, and I just have 1 more book to go in this series. And so my brain, this series is launching, and my brain is already every now and then starting to think about what's next. Yeah. So I'm super excited about it. The feedback has been great. I will tell you that we did very intentionally in this new series lean really hard into the relationships, and there's still plenty of suspense, but we were intentional about we talked about it being more romance, but I really think it's more relationships. We really intentionally spent more time on the characters and the families and the relationships and the romance, which leaves a little bit less time for the suspense. And it's still there. It's just that we made room for the other. And so far, people have been happy with it. It's a risk. We'll see how people feel. But in general, most people have commented, there's a little less suspense, but it was still a Lynn Blackburn book. And I'm like, that's exactly what we were going for. So I'm super excited about it.
That's exciting to hear for you. It's always a little nerve wracking to kind of change the, I guess you could say, the formula a little bit.
Yes.
In the book, so.
Yeah. It's a little bit, I'm not even sure that it's really heavier on the romance. I just think it's heavier on the relationships. And so all of them. And that's, I'm excited about it though. People are liking it, so that makes me happy.
Your cousins, and you're talking about the big family tree, reminds me, I don't know if you read any historical romance, of Julie Lessman's. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've read any of hers, but she starts with the grandparents' love story and then goes to their kids' love stories and then goes to their grandkids. But the last series is the O'Connor cousins.
Okay.
I said the last one she's put out. I think she's going to keep going, but you do have like a family tree to remember, like, who belongs to
who does what. Well, and that's the thing, because somebody was like, I would like to see Papa and Granny Quinn's story. And I'm like, I don't write historical. Like, I enjoy reading historical, but historical readers, like people who are like intense about it, they kind of scare me a little bit, because they know. Right? Like, they know that is not a word that someone would have used in 1812. Like, that is not, no one would have said that. No one would have worn that. No one would have, that would not have worked. It's the research of it. I'm like, that would be intense. I love reading it. And history was one of my favorites. And maybe someday when my kids are out of the house, I'll have a little more time. But they do. I was like, I don't think I can write Papa and Granny Quinn's love story. That scares me. I would have to find a historical author who could like read everything and do the, help me make sure I have all those little pieces because it's intense. It's a lot, but that is amazing. I love the whole, because I am a sucker for a family saga. Give me a family saga. I love seeing it all play out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not as intense. I think your research you did with your dive team and all of that is probably at the same level as the historical. Because I had the word okay in my book. Like someone said okay and they're like, yeah, they didn't say that back then. And I was like, oh. Wow.
What did they say? Yes. Like yes. And what did they
They did. They're more like yes.
Much more formal.
Yeah. So
what about contractions? Did they do contractions or was it more
a good a lot of so it sounds more Western you know, like I want to say slang where you're kind of
yes, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know, so but anyways,
good
okay.
To know.
So it is a different world, I will say your readers will you don't get the details. So how can our listeners then connect with you?
So the best way, I think, you know, if you, depending on when people are listening, it has, I think, last week or sometime this week. I don't know. I'm still in a post-deadline fog. I don't even 100% sure know what day it is. And so I'm behind on my whole life because when I turn in a book, everything gets, y'all can't see the sides of my office for a reason. There's it's absolute chaos here. But Facebook went down, Instagram went down, people's phones went down. Like there's all these things happening with the internet or whatever. And so I tell people really and truly the best way to stay up to date is a newsletter because it comes to your email. Not that email can't go down too, but it's a little less risky really than social media. I like social media. It's just that you never know for sure. It's not a guaranteed thing. Mm-hmm. So the newsletter, if you go to my website, lynnhblackburn.com, sign up for the newsletter. I do actually have a whole bunch of freebies. I have a free novella that ties the Dive Team series to the Defend and Protect series. And it is the medical examiner from Beneath the Surface and all that, Dr. Sharon Oliver. It's her story. And there was a Secret Service agent in her past, and he's back. And so that's how I tie those two together. And that's completely free if you sign up for the newsletter. I also have a free, it's not even a short story. It's like a scene, really. But it's Gabe and Anissa's first kiss. The one that happened before everything happened. Yes, indeed. Yes. So there's a flash fiction that I wrote. There's a recipe book that has Lee's cookies and the Better Than Anything cake and all that kind of stuff. There's a whole bunch of freebies if people sign up for the newsletter. And then beyond that, I'm on mostly on Facebook and Instagram at Lynn H. Blackburn. I do have a Twitter. X, whatever. I'm almost never on there. But Instagram and Facebook are the best spots to find me and keep up with what's going on.
Wonderful. I think that we're going to subscribe to your newsletter.
You should. Let me know. Make sure you get everything should come through. There was a big, there was a new thing that we all had to go in and do this big update on with newsletters. And then they got a little funky for a little while. And I'm thinking, I hope everything is working the way it's supposed to. So y'all have to let me know if you have any issues. But yeah, there's we didn't talk about it, but there's also the letters between Gil and Ivy. All the letters that they wrote that's in the next series. But there's, he wrote her letters and she wrote him letters before everything happened. And you can get all the letters as well in the freebies. So yeah. Stuff like that as a reader.
Is that when you're Gil and Ivy?
Gil and Ivy are Malicious Intent in the second, they're the second book in the second series. And Gil's the one who cooks and Ivy owns is the engineer who designs prosthetics, and they were best friends and then they were torn apart as they were their teen years. And then now they're back together on all the letters that they wrote back and forth when they were younger. So they start 8-year-old Ivy getting 9-year-old Gil. And then you get to the point where Gil's writing her, but she's not writing, he's just writing them, but he's not sending them because he doesn't have her address and doesn't know where to find her. I had fun writing those. I will say those were a lot of fun.
too. Yeah.
I try to make it where, like, if you're going to sign, publishers are really big on newsletters. You know, they want to see your newsletter numbers because they do know how social media can be a little wonky. And, you know, the algorithms, you can even, you know, you can follow somebody on social media and not see their stuff, even though you've technically followed them. And yeah, at least with a newsletter, it's coming to your inbox once a month or whatever. And so they're really big on it. So I try to make it worth people's while if they're going to sign up. So yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, Lynn, we had a blast talking to you
today. Thank you for having me. This was great.
You were a lot of fun.
Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, please consider signing up for our free newsletter. Each week, you'll receive news about our events for both readers and authors, plus updates on my books. You can sign up at www.literaryscape.com/newsletter. Until next time, happy and blessed reading and writing.